Welcome to this special podcast on radiation. I'm Mike Adams, and this is PrepWithMike.com. I'm the founder of Brighteon.com as well. You can find my podcast there. Now, we're going to break down just in real simple terms here in just a few minutes about how radiation actually works, because this will help answer all kinds of questions that people have about radiation, because, you know, we might be facing a fallout scenario in World War III because of the situation in Russia and so on. And people have questions like, oh, can I eat canned food? That where the can itself has been, there's been radioactive fallout onto the can. Can I eat the food inside? Or can I eat fish that are caught in a lake where the lake has suffered some radiation fallout? Or can I use a water filter to remove radiation from contaminated water? These kinds of questions, right? Or what's the real danger of being around radiation? Is it bad if it's on your skin? Is it bad if it's in your lungs? You know, what's the deal? Is it bad if it's in your food or milk? So here's the key thing to understand. Radiation itself, the electromagnetic radiation, is not persistent. It is created and consumed in, you know, a fraction of a second, like a nanosecond, because it moves at the speed of light after it's created as you know, radiation, obviously. But radiation is constantly created by the decay of a radioisotope, which simply means an atomic element that is, it has an unstable mass that is constantly decaying to a lower mass. And during this decay, like let's say cesium-137, the 137 refers to the mass, the atomic mass, as it's decaying to, let's say, cesium-134 or 133, which is the stable isotope, during that decay, it's giving off energy because the mass is being converted into energy. And the half-life of decay simply refers to how long it takes for half of the mass of the radioisotope, or half of the, you could say, the atomic elements of the radioisotope, to decay to a stable form. So for cesium-137, the half-life is roughly 30 years. For iodine-131, and remember the 131 refers to the mass, that half-life is roughly 1 week, let's just say. I think it's 6-point-something days, but let's just call it a week. So 30 years versus 1 week, but it's the same process that's happening. If you think about it, the shorter the half-life, the more intense the radiation output is for that radioisotope. So if you have something that's decaying very rapidly, it's putting out a lot of radiation, a lot of energy, it's very dangerous, and the half-life is very short. But the good news is that the half-lives that you need to endure are also over more quickly. So following a nuclear blast, iodine-131, yeah, there's a lot of it around in the air, probably. It's on the dust, it's on the particles, and so on. But if you wait just 1 week, then there's half as much. And if you wait 2 weeks, then there's 1/4 as much. And if you wait 3 weeks, there's 1/8 as much, and so on. Whereas with cesium-137, you got to wait 30 years for it to go down to half of what it was, and then another 30 years to go down to 1/4, and another 30 years to 1/8. So it's important to understand the half-lives of these radioisotopes in order to understand the safety profile. So for example, if you're worried about iodine-131 after a nuclear blast, which, you know, you should be, because that's one of the many elements that can be created in a nuclear blast or a nuclear war or even certain kinds of nuclear accidents, then it's good to understand that if you stay underground or in your bunker or in your house for just 2 weeks and then you come outside, you're now subject to only 1/4 as much iodine radiation as you would have been immediately after the blast. But cesium is going to take much longer, but the radiation being emitted by cesium is much less because it's a much slower decay. Now, let's get back to the atomic decay question for a second, because this is going to answer a lot of things. Radiation itself, like I said, it's created and then it's gone in a nanosecond. So when you think about what's the problem with radiation, it's not really the radiation as much as it's the atomic mass of the radioisotopes that are still there. Those are the sources of the radiation pollution. And those masses can be filtered out of water, for example. They can be washed off if it's on your skin or on your clothing. They can be eliminated in digestion by consuming the right things that bind with, let's say, radiation-contaminated food. And then you can move it out of your body through using things like zeolites and apple pectin and some other things. I actually have a patent on this very point. It's called cesium eliminator. And that's registered with the U.S. Patent Office if you want to look it up. And it describes the formula of what you do to remove cesium from your digestive tract. We've done all the tests on that over the years. So there are ways to remove the physical atomic elements that are continuing to emit radiation. Removing them reduces your exposure or eliminates your exposure. So here's a question. Let's talk about, can you eat canned food where the can itself has been exposed to some level of radioactive fallout? Well, the correct answer of that is if you wash off the can is now clean of radioactive particles, and you open the can, the food inside will not be radioactive. Why? Because the food inside is not contaminated with cesium or iodine or any of the other radioisotope elements, because those weren't present when the food was grown. So yes, the food inside the can is safe to eat, even if the can itself has been exposed to some amount of radioactive fallout. You just have to wash off the can. Make sense? Now, what about fish caught in a lake where the lake has been exposed to radiation fallout? Well, since the fish are living creatures engaging in metabolism, so the fish are eating the grasses or the other fish that are in the lake, if there's been fallout on the lake, then there's going to be cesium-137 incorporated into the ecosystem of that lake, which includes, you know, grasses and algae and all the other things. Well, that's going to be eaten by the fish, which means the cesium-137 shows up in the fish flesh. So if you catch fish in a lake where there's been fallout, then you're eating radioactive fish, and that's bad. So you would not want to do that. And no, there's not any way to clean the radiation out of the fish because it's part of their flesh. So the thing to understand is that cesium-137 mimics the metabolic pathways of potassium. So everywhere potassium goes in your body, which it goes to every cell, by the way, and you know, it accumulates in some places more than others, but it's a part of every cell. It's part of the cell water pumping membrane mechanism, by the way. But if you eat something that's got cesium-137 in it, it's going to go into your cells. It's going to be incorporated into your cell membranes, and then it's going to emit radiation from inside your body. So then you become radioactive because you've incorporated those atomic elements into your tissues. See, that's the issue. And that's why you don't drink milk after a nuclear accident like Chernobyl if the cows that gave the milk were eating the grass where the fallout happened, because there's no way to remove the cesium from the milk. You can't do it. Because if you were to have a filter that was so effective that it could remove the cesium particles from the milk, it would also remove the milk particles and you would just have water. You understand? So you can't drink milk or eat meat, or even you can't grow vegetables in soils that have been subjected to radiation fallout. So this is why you have to have pre-nuke food already stored. And you can already imagine how valuable that's going to be after a nuclear accident, because anybody that has pre-nuke food, well, that food is going to be safe, even if the container of the food has been subjected to radiation or fallout. The food inside is still okay. Now, water is a little bit different, because water itself cannot be made highly radioactive. If it's just H2O, it's almost impossible to make H2O radioactive, although there are some unstable isotopes of oxygen, but that's more for like lab science type of theory work and things like that. In reality, if you expose water to radiation, it does not make the water radioactive. Just like if you put water in a microwave and you heat it up with a microwave and you take the water out of the microwave, it's not now emitting microwave radiation. It doesn't work that way. So you can take a bunch of water, hit it with a bunch of radiation, you're just going to make it hotter. after the radiation stops, the water is still just water. But if water is contaminated with particles, like cesium-137 particles that are engaged in this process of decay, atomic decay, well, then it's the pollution in the water that's producing the radiation. And you can take out the pollution. How do you take out the pollution? Water filters. And I am going to run tests on this, by the way, in my lab. This is my number one lab project right now. I'm going to test a bunch of popular filters and determine how well they remove cesium. I'm not going to use radioactive cesium. I'll just use stable cesium, but it'll be a very close approximation of how well it would remove contaminated, you know, cesium-137. But my best guess as a scientist in this space is that most water filters, if they remove other contaminants effectively, if they have carbon block, for example, or KDF media in them, which a lot of them do, or activated charcoal, or like coconut fibers that are processed correctly for water filtration, I believe they're all going to work to filter out the particles that emit radiation, which means that even if you have just a regular standard water filter that's very good, that removes, let's say, 99% of lead or 99% of, you know, bacteria, amoeba, mercury, things like that, pesticides, chlorine chemicals, and so on, it's also very likely going to remove all the sources of radioactive particles. So having a water filter is crucial to surviving fallout because you can filter out the radiation. But understand, when you filter out the radiation, you're actually concentrating the radiation in your filter element at that time. So you're actually depositing the radiation in your filter element, and then your filter element becomes radioactive. So, which is okay. I mean, that's expected. Doesn't mean you immediately throw that filter away. It's still good. You just don't want to, you know, sleep next to it with that sucker emitting radiation next to your head or something, you know. Don't put it next to your bed on the bedstand at night. So water exposure to radioisotopes is one vector that's pretty easy to resolve simply by having a good water filter. And the food vector, well, that's something that is easy to resolve if you have stored food, or if you have a radiation detector, you know, a Geiger counter, and you can check the food for radiation before you eat it or before you drink it, if it's milk, for example. But the other vector of exposure, and this is what gets most people, is inhaling dust particles that are carrying the radioisotope elements. Because when you inhale those things, then of course goes into your lungs, and a lot of that goes, not only can it lodge in your lungs, but then depending on what it is, some of that can get into your blood from your lungs, and it can be incorporated into your body's cells from there. But even if it just lodges in your lungs, or say you have just radioactive dust in your lungs, well, you can die from, you know, radiation exposure over time from the radioisotopes that are decaying within your lungs. So that's why it's important to have a respirator, particulate filters, or to limit your exposure to radioactive fallout by being in a house or a structure that is sealed and that has a positive pressure blower inside, for example, is always pushing air out, and it's using very effective HEPA filtration in order to remove all particles from the air, which would also concentrate the radioactive particles onto the HEPA filtration media, which would make that filter element radioactive, but it would keep it out of the air. Now, the final vector of exposure is simply being around all the radiation so that the decaying elements are around you and the radiation is penetrating your body, exposing you to high intensity radiation, usually over a short period of time, but very high intensity, causing, of course, the chromosomal damage, the DNA mutations, which leads to radiation poisoning / radiation sickness, and so on. So that's only the acute exposure that will occur among people who are very, very close to radiation sources, such as, you know, being part of the cleanup crew on Chernobyl, for example, or somehow being exposed to a radioactive warhead that for some reason you get your hands on, which is highly inadvisable, by the way. You know, don't buy radioactive warheads off eBay or through other means. You know, if you have a like a tablespoon of cesium-137 in your hand, for more than a few seconds, you're already dead. You just don't know it yet because you've been exposed to all that radiation, and it's just a matter of time before your chromosomes fall apart, basically, and your body can't build new cells. So, but that is not what's going to hit most people. That's just people who are really, really close to radiation sources. Most people need to think about radioactive food exposure, water exposure, and particulate matter in the air as a vector of exposure. And those three things can be tackled. Those three things, you can defend yourself against all three with the means that I've described here. So unless you're living right at ground zero, you don't have to die from a nuclear war. But you do need stored food, you do need water filters, you do need a respirator that works, especially if you plan to be outside. You do need, you know, plastic sheeting and tape for your house to seal it up if necessary. It wouldn't hurt to have some full-body Tyvek suits and a means to wash off your clothing outside even before you come back inside, that is, if you have to go outside. And remember, you're not going to be able to grow food after the fallout. You're not going to be able to eat beef from cows that were eating grass after the fallout. So think about that. You got to plan accordingly. So that, anyway, that's my quick overview. There's a lot more detail to this. I don't have time to go into that right now, but I hope this has given you just some basic information that can help you prepare for the possibility of nuclear war. But thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. PrepWithMike.com is where you can find all my prepping videos and podcasts. Just be safe in all of this. And also download my free audiobook. It's called Resilient Prepping. And that's at the website resilientprepping.com. It's free. Full audiobook. Completely free. People are raving about it. They love the book. You can also download Survival Nutrition from the website survivalnutrition.com. And both of those, both of them are free, and they're very, very helpful. It will keep you informed and help you get through this. Because even if there's a nuclear war, folks, I'm not dying. I don't plan on dying. I plan on living through it, no matter what the world looks like. You know, billions might die, but we don't have to die because we know the science of it and we know how to protect ourselves from radiation from all these different vectors. It's doable, folks. It's doable. Nukes are not the end of the world. I mean, it might look like it, but there is a way to actually survive it. All right. Thanks for listening. Take care.